From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on May 6, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. May the 6th be with you. On this episode of The Lead, we look at the state of play heading into the final week of the legislature. Who's in and who is out?
Oh, yeah.
We'll find out. Senator Tim Scott was on NBC's Meet the Press talking about running mate speculation for Donald Trump. And Congressman Jim Clyburn was on MSNBC regarding his Presidential Medal of Freedom Award and the state of America. And we catch up with Tom Barkin, head of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, talking the economy, housing, inflation, and more, all that good stuff that everyone loves talking about over and over and over again. But we need something from you, and this is my personal plea.
And what do you want from me?
Call The Lead, please. 803-563-7169. We are soliciting parental advice for A.T. Papa Shire. He's got baby Rena now. She's more than a week old, and we just give us what he needs to navigate these new waters he finds himself in. I can say we're all in this together here. I'm silently parenting from afar. Laissez-faire. 803-563-7169. It is Signee Die Week, the last week of the legislative session.
Shout out.
Now, regular listeners know what's up when we talk about Signee Die, but the second Thursday in May every year is when the legislature adjourns Signee Die, which is Latin, and means with no appointed date for resumption.
Sounds interesting.
We have a part-time legislature that runs from the second Tuesday of January through the second Thursday in May, and lawmakers are up in Columbia Tuesday through Thursday every week in between then, holding committee meetings, floor debates and votes, writing legislation, and working with their colleagues to get it passed, and also meeting with groups and others, all in between that. So very busy times in Columbia when they're in session. Now, this is the second year of the two-year-long session. So while bills were carried over from the last session, when things resumed this past January, come 5 p.m. on Thursday, legislation that isn't in a conference committee or on its way to the governor will be DEA dead. And will have to be reintroduced next year, and the process will start all over again. We'll have a complete recap of this week in Saturday's podcast. But right now, I want to look at what could go down over the next few days.
All right.
Let's start off by looking at a conference committee made up of three House and three Senate members that will meet Tuesday morning to iron out differences on the so-called Transparency and Integrity in Education Act, H. 3728, which outlaws teaching critical race theory concepts in the classroom. This bill has been in conference committee since last June, and lawmakers are now set to move on it this final week. A big point of contention is a section that states schools shall prominently post information regarding curriculum and instructional materials on the school district website at least 7 days prior to the start of classes. If any curriculum or instructional materials are added to a class or course after the start of the semester, then the local education agency shall post that information on the school district website at least 3 days prior to that being added and taught. So that makes it hard to be flexible and teach things like current events. There are also some concerns about frivolous complaints being lodged too. So Senate, House, going back and forth on this one. And then again, like we always say about critical race theory, it's not taught in K-12 schools in South Carolina. This is just a reaction to all the hubbub surrounding CRT. Now in the Senate, lawmakers will be working through their 58-page calendar. 3 days, 58 pages. You do the math, folks. We'll be watching to see if the Senate does anything related to the House's energy bill, which has been a huge point of contention between the two chambers these past few weeks, with the Senate saying that the bill, H. 5118, as it's written, would roll back regulatory protections for consumers. Could a skinny bill allowing for Dominion Energy and Santee Cooper to build a natural gas plant in the state to provide much-needed energy be the move? We'll see. Thin is in. Now, we'll see, but some of the more controversial bills have been blocked on the Senate calendar, and that would require extensive debate even if they came up. And when you only have 3 legislative days left, hard to kind of bottle up debate and movements on the calendar when you're getting bogged down. So we'll see what the threshold is there for that. Over in the House this week, members will be working through their 19-page calendar, and some big bills to watch there would be S1, which would create the charge of drug-induced homicide. S-1021 would extend and expand the Abandoned Buildings Tax Credit Program in the state, and S-1188 would require written notification to parents or legal guardians of a student facing expulsion, and also include their right to have legal counsel present at the hearing, the right to question all witnesses, and contact information for a legal aid service provider, which may determine eligibility for free legal representation. So the notification must also include the right to access the investigative file in its entirety, to include all documents and videos at least 3 days prior to that expulsion hearing for a student. S-1001 would require inmates be paid the federal minimum wage when employed by private industry. And S-1046, the Judicial Merit Selection Commission Reform Bill, changes the makeup of the commission and how judges are elected by the General Assembly. So that's all what's before the House right now, some of the big bills they are facing. Speaking of the JMSC, in between all of this during Sine Die Week, the Judicial Merit Selection Commission, which is on the cusp of being reformed, like we said, is holding meetings on Wednesday and Thursday mornings with six candidates for the state Supreme Court seat that Chief Justice Don Beatty will be vacating at the end of July following his mandatory retirement at 72. The candidates include Judges Blake Hewitt of the Appeals Court, Ralph Anderson, and Deidre Jefferson on Wednesday, and Judges Keith Kelly, Jocelyn Newman, and Appeals Court Judge Letitia Verdon. Lawmakers will elect the next Supreme Court justice on June 12th, the day after the primary.
Perfect timing.
And up in D.C., Congress is in session this week.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Congress, we had two members of our delegation on the Sunday shows this weekend. Senator Tim Scott would not say whether or not he would accept the results of the 2024 presidential election, despite being pressed multiple times by Meet the Press moderator Kristen Welker in their wide-ranging interview on Sunday. Scott, who has been floated as a potential vice presidential pick for former President Donald Trump, was with Trump along with other potential VP picks like Senator Marco Rubio, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, and others this past weekend. Now take a listen to part of this interview with Welker and Scott, in which she asks him whether he spoke with Trump about being his running mate.
But just to be very clear, it didn't come up at all? Do you think you're on the short list?
No, ma'am, it did not come up. African-American unemployment rate is 6.4 today.
But what about being VP? President Trump's VP? Did it come up at all? Do you think you're on a short list?
I hope that the president will choose a person who helps the country unite and heal. I certainly expect to have a decision from President Trump in the next 60 days or so, but he did not bring it up. I certainly didn't bring it up. I'm excited that in this nation, a poor kid from South Carolina could rise to the level of being a United States Senator. It just tells me that all things are possible for kids growing up in poverty today. Listen to the show and know that all things are possible for your future.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the headlines this week. In an interview, Mr. Trump this week again would not commit to accepting the election results of 2024 if he loses. He still hasn't conceded the last election. You, of course, did vote to certify the 2020 election results, and you've said, quote, it was not stolen. Why would you join a ticket with someone who believes the exact opposite on this critical point?
Well, I think we have to listen to what President Trump said and not what the reporters said that he actually said. Here's one of the things that he's been very clear in even talking about the situation in Wisconsin. What he said was he expects there to be an honest election. He expects the results to be clear and for him to be successful. I expect him to be successful as well. There's no doubt that when you look at the polls across our country, the one thing that is crystal clear that the American people now having a contrast between 4 years of Joe Biden versus 4 years of Donald Trump, they're really excited to get back to the Trump years. And so I expect the election to be fair, and I expect Donald Trump to be our next president.
In terms of what he said, he specifically said, if it's not fair, as you're saying, you have to fight for the right of the country. And just this week, he said that he won Wisconsin falsely, Senator. So again, to the point, you voted to certify the election results of 2020. It's the exact opposite of what you said and did after 2020. Why would you want to be on a ticket with someone where there's such a fundamental difference?
There is clear facts here. President Trump himself said he expects this election to be fair, he expects it to be honest, and he expects to win. That's what the presidential candidate should expect, and I expect the exact same thing. And frankly, the American people agree with him. This is an issue that is not an issue, so I'm not going to make it an issue.
Well, Senator, will you commit to accepting the election results of 2024, bottom line?
At the end of the day, the 47th president of the United States will be President Donald Trump, and I'm excited to give back to low inflation, low unemployment.
Wait, Senator, yes or no? Yes or no? Will you accept the election results of 2024 no matter who wins?
That is my statement.
But is it just yes or no? Will you accept the election results of 2024?
I look forward to President Trump being the 47th president. Kristen, you could ask him multiple times.
Senator, just a yes or no answer.
So the American people, the American people will make the decision.
But I don't hear you committing
for President Trump. That's that clear.
I don't hear you committing to the election results.
Here's the deal.
Will you commit to accepting the election results?
This is why so many Americans believe that NBC is an extension of the Democrat Party. At the end of the day, I've said what I've said, and I know that the American people, their voices will be heard, and I believe that President Trump will be our next president. It's that simple.
But, Senator, as you know, the hallmark of our democracy is that both candidates agree to a peaceful transfer of power. So I'm asking you, as a potential VP nominee, will you accept to commit to the election results in this election cycle, no matter who wins? Just simply yes or no.
I expect President Trump to win the next election. Listen, I'm not going to answer your hypothetical question when, in fact, I believe the American people are speaking today on the results of the election. And if it continues for the next 6 months, we find ourselves in a great position where we get back to another century of American prosperity.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to that.
Now, a little reminder after that interview, journalists are here to hold folks accountable and ask the tough questions for the people. NBC News is not an extension of the Democratic Party, but it should be clear to viewers and listeners when someone is unwilling or able to answer a yes or no question that pertains to the heart of American democracy, and especially in a post-January 6 world. Just a note. Sticking with the Sunday shows, 6th District Democratic Congressman Jim Clyburn was on MSNBC's This Weekend with Michael Steele and was asked about receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor in the nation. He got that on Friday from President Joe Biden.
I'm sitting here in Orangeburg County, a county that Michael knows very well.
I know very well, Congressman, very well.
And as I sat there, in fact, from the moment I received the phone call from the president, I thought a lot about my parents. They made significant sacrifices, endured a lot of indignities in order to position me and my siblings, which we've tried to pass on to our children, the qualities that are necessary to do our part in helping to make this country a better place. I like to say to fulfill our pursuit toward a more perfect union. It is a great country in no need of being made great. We've always got to keep working to make the greatness of this country accessible and affordable for all of its citizens. And that's what I was thinking about, looking in the faces of my three daughters, my two grandchildren, and my great-grand. My granddaughter was there holding her 1-year-old. I thought about all of that and what a family effort it's been to get me to this point.
What a beautiful, beautiful reflection, sir. And just to echo Simone and Michael, many congratulations to you. What an incredible honor in the same week that you were with the President of the United States at the White House receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom. You got the former president at a private donor event likening the Biden administration to the Gestapo. Let me read you just a little bit of that reporting. These people are running a Gestapo administration, Trump said, according to audio of the luncheon provided to NBC News. And it's the only thing they have. It's the only way they're going to win, in their opinion.
That is just incredible, but it's not surprising. This president is given to hyperbole on every subject that he ever approaches. He has a understanding of this country that I thought we left behind more than 100 years ago. But, you know, as I watch things happen in the country today, I've been hearkening back for some time now to the 1876 presidential election and how this country got off track after the Civil War, how we got into Jim Crow. And I want to remind your listeners that the presidency of Rutherford B. Hayes came into being by one vote. Jim Crow became the law of the land by one single vote. A committed vote of 8-7 launched us into Jim Crow. I'm the 9th African-American to serve in Congress from South Carolina. There were eight before me. But the problem is there were 95 years between number eight and number nine. Why? Because the country got off track after that 1876 election. And we are approaching the same kinds of elements today, the same kind of rhetoric that we're hearing from Donald Trump. It's the kind of rhetoric that took place in that election, more at the state levels. Wade Hampton ran that kind of campaign that led to the takeover of all the southern states by the so-called Redeemers. That is the kind of rhetoric that's taking place today. I've been telling all my friends in the Congressional Black Caucus, I wish you'd take a little time and just check a little read of all of what was being said back in 1876 and think about what took place on January 6, 2021. It's exactly the same thing. The words are different, but the meanings are the same. The phrases are so identical. And that we're not careful in this country, and I know that I've been hearing today what the Democrats need to do. No, this is not just the Democrats. This is about the voters in this country maintaining what this country is all about, doing what we can to fulfill the great promise of this country. And it's still a promise, an unfulfilled promise. Joe Biden talks about it all the time, talking about redeeming the soul of America. And that is what is necessary. He quoted me, I think, on Friday, because I like to talk about Alexis de Tocqueville's notion that this country's greatness is not that we are more enlightened than any other nation, but because we have always been able to repair our faults. There are some faults in this country that need to be repaired. And Joe Biden has been working very hard to repair those faults. Student loan debt, repairing a big fault. Doing something about our climate, a big fault. And I don't quite understand young people who say to me, Joe Biden is not doing this and he's not doing that. He is doing a great deal.
Now for a preview of this week in South Carolina, our own little Sunday shoe in these parts. Since it is Sine Die Week, it makes it a little hard to have reporters on to break down what happened as of Thursday at 5 p.m., when we typically tape the show Thursday mornings, because we have to have it ready to air Friday night, so it's a little bit of a process. It's how the show biz works, baby. So this week, we were fortunate to sit down with Tom Barkin, who is the president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, to talk about the health of the economy, persistent inflation, housing, and more. I open by asking Tom to tell us about how the 5th District, which he oversees and wherein, is doing.
My district, South North Carolina, Maryland, D.C., Virginia, and West Virginia, I sort of think of it as three different economies. There's the South and North Carolina economy, very healthy, very vibrant, and importantly, workforce is growing, population's growing, which means on the positive side, jobs are being hired for and people are available for jobs. On the negative side, pressure on housing. Mm-hmm. But one more positive actually is a significant growth in housing. Now, I'll exclude Charleston from that, but around Greenville, around Columbia, mm-hmm. Around Raleigh and Charlotte, you're just seeing a lot more building of housing that you're seeing anywhere else in the district.
Well, so you brought up housing, and I was going to talk about that in a moment, but just let's stick with that and see what you see going on in that market right now, because it is so hot right now, even with the interest rates being what they are, the mortgage rates being what they are. How do you make that mesh, and do we need more? You're talking about Charleston, obviously mm-hmm. really trying to keep up there, but you're talking about folks here in Columbia, talking about all cash offers, over asking price. It's just a bidding war nonstop. What needs to be done to mitigate that situation?
Well, if you just take a look back, post the Great Recession, we underbuilt housing for 10 years, and we didn't notice it because millennials were moving later to move into a house. And so mm-hmm. we didn't have enough housing. But then when the pandemic happened, you had two things at the same time. One is, a bunch of millennials finally had kids and decided they really needed a house. But maybe more importantly, people who spent time at home discovered they needed a better home. Mm-hmm. Or the way the economists would put it is they wanted to put more of their spending basket into their house. And so demand just skyrocketed. And it was for a better home. It was for fewer roommates because, you know, working from home, you may want a little bit more space. Second homes, which obviously is a big issue, or opportunity on the coast. So demand skyrocketed, mm-hmm. and it skyrocketed well in excess of available supply. So then you get to 21, 22, and it was a frenzy. We started raising rates. That obviously takes a little bit of the bloom off the demand frenzy, but you've still got demand. Mm-hmm. And now you've got this situation where people with 3% mortgages don't want to trade out into a 7% mortgage. Yeah. So supply still's very short. So high demand, short supply, that's the challenge. Now, the answer to this, to your question, is more housing. We've mm-hmm. got to build more housing. If you look at the economy in total, we are building a lot of single family housing. That's the good news. The more good news is permits are the place that's getting built the most is Florida, Texas, South Carolina, and North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And so we're building it and we're building it here, but it's got to come online, you know, a lot faster, I think, to get over the supply and demand imbalance. And you could try to solve this problem through demand, but that's a very painful way to do it. The right way to solve it is through more supply. And that has some combination of getting developers interested, the price of land, certainty and permitting and taxes and those sorts of things. All of the kinds of things that one needs to do to get the supply on the ground. Mm-hmm.
But are you still surprised, even with the rates being what they are, we're talking about 7% mortgage, which is historically on average, right?
So I mean, about average.
What do you tell folks when they're complaining about that and when we can see those rates come down or be a little bit lower?
Well, so people don't always complain. There's a lot of people in my generation who remind everybody that their first mortgage
was in the
teens.
I'm thinking of my generation, Tom.
Yeah. I was thinking you're in my generation, so now you won't have me back. But and I don't think the 3% mortgage thing is a rational thought. So I tell people, if you need a house, you need a house. And if the kids are growing and you don't have enough space, mm-hmm. you need a house. And if you think rates are going to come back down again, you can always refinance. Right. If you don't think rates are going to come back down, you still need a house. And so, you know, I think that's where that's going to go. And you do see at the beginning of the year, rates came down just a tick and it seemed like demand for housing really picked up. I think that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's what's going to need. That's what's going to have to happen.
And before we jump to inflation, just one more with housing here. But what about affordable housing? That's a big concern, too, especially when you're talking about these big metro areas like Charleston, where people are priced out of the market. But to keep places like Charleston vibrant, you need a strong workforce. How do you mitigate that situation?
It's supply. I mean, mm-hmm. you've got to bring supply online. In the classic affordable housing, there is a subsidy stack, and there's money that's being put behind it in lots of cities. Charlotte's had a huge investment by the banks and others in terms of that mm-hmm. affordable housing subsidy stack. But there's also this next issue, which I'll call workforce housing. Mm-hmm. It's not pure affordable. It's not rent subsidized. But it is for, you know, nurses and firemen and place for people to live. Mm-hmm. And that is most available in places where you've got exurban land at relatively low cost, like around Greenville. Mm-hmm. It's least available where it's really hard to figure out where to build, like around Charleston, where you know you've got the ocean on one side, you've got a national park, I mean state park on the other side. It's just, mm-hmm. just hard to find the land. Yeah.
And so now let's pivot to the economy, looking at challenges. What do you see as the biggest challenge right now facing businesses in the region? Is it inflation? Is it workforce? Is it housing? How do you see it right now?
There is a set of businesses in interest-sensitive sectors, mm-hmm. like residential real estate, commercial real estate, banking. I could put some parts of goods manufacturing in there. They're in what they would feel as a recessionary moment. Demand is way down from where it was. You know, hard to get loans if you're a bank. And so they're really getting hit by interest rates. Mm-hmm. The rest of the economy, though, is actually doing just fine. Not as frothy or as you might think the numbers would suggest, but it's doing just fine, solid. Mm-hmm. And the supply chain issues are over. For the most part, the labor issues are behind them too. Now, mm-hmm. the exception would be skilled trades and, you know, construction, manufacturing. I'd even put nursing, veterinary assistants. So those places where you actually need a credential to get in there, they're still tight. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, the labor market's kind of loosened up as well. And so for them, it's all about demand. And the good news is demand's not falling off a table. I don't hear anybody other than those few segments talk about being in a recession. I don't think that's the situation we're in. To the extent that people have concerns, it's just uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And there's uncertainty about where the economy is going. There's uncertainty about geopolitical events like mm-hmm. the Middle East. There's uncertainty about what the Fed's going to do. And I think that's actually the big concern people have. They're beyond... You know, they've moved up Maslow's hierarchy. They're no longer on, can I find enough workers or do I have a customer? Mm-hmm. Or even my costs are going up 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%. They're really just concerned about what's going to happen tomorrow.
That was Tom Barkin, President and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, talking with me on This Week in South Carolina on Monday, May 6th. That full episode airs Friday night at 7:30 p.m. on SCETV and online at youtube.com/SouthCarolinaETV. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. A.T. Shire, producer of the Lead Podcast, is also here. Prep Papa.
Here I am. I'm here.
Present.
I'm here in person, you know. I don't know if mentally I am here.
People are hearing the changes in your voice. They can't see you, but they're assuming there's changes in how you look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're not disheveled. You're still with it. You're keeping it tight.
Well, I keep it relatively, I'm edging disheveled most times. So when I look and when I actually am disheveled, people are like, AT's holding it together.
The
you know?
Slightest difference.
He doesn't look that much different.
Well, I mean, you don't have to shave that much, do you?
No, I'm the least hairy Middle Eastern guy you've ever met in your life. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, right.
My dad has no hair on his legs. If he wants to call in and defend himself, he can. But
I dare you, Dad.
I've seen him, Dad. Okay?
And they're moving down here soon.
Yes.
They'll be here soon.
My parents will be here in, I would say, nigh on 30 days from now.
Mm-hmm.
So that might help with me getting back to my, like, mainline disheveled look.
Yeah.
You know?
Not this deviation. Yeah, we're just bringing the parents down. That's what we do.
Yes. It's Gavin's done it because this pod is his baby. And now I had an actual baby, and it's also this pod's baby. But my parents are going to move down to my stepmother got a shirt from all her coworkers because she's retiring teaching, mm-hmm. and said promoted to grandma. So she's so excited. Anyway, Gavin, speaking of calls and all that stuff, my dad having to defend himself, we do have some calls. Mm-hmm. Great advice from friends of the pod. Are you ready?
Yeah, lay
okay,
it down.
Let's hit it.
AT, congratulations on being a dad. This is Ben from Greenville, and just wanted to share that I have no parenting advice. After my first child, we really felt like we were doing a pretty good job. So we had our second child, and, you know, things were not going so well at that point. And I just figured, hey, let's double down on all the things that went really well with the first child. And, I don't know, it just felt like things went off the rail. And, then when we had our third child, I was beginning to, lose confidence that I knew anything about parenting. And by the time the fourth child came along, it's just complete ignorance. I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. So anyway, your best hope of knowing what you're doing is having just one child. So, good luck. Hope everything goes well. Enjoy the sleep while they're sleeping well, because after a little while, they do start waking up a little bit more. So have a great time.
Ben Davis, great to hear from you always. We love the insight there. Mm. It sounded like he was being held hostage.
By his own ignorance, yes.
Yeah.
Luckily, Gavin has instituted a one-child policy for the pod, so, like, I don't even have the choice for extras.
Just, yeah.
It's a lot like China here.
Yeah, we might loosen it like they have, but
maybe,
no,
maybe.
We'll see. So far, I don't want to be too overshadowed.
Rena's so perfect. Who could argue with perfection?
We did, well, yes, to an extent. We did have to let her go from the pod already, though.
Yeah.
She was really making some sloppy cuts.
She was missing a lot of deadlines. And
we'll give her a couple more years. Maybe she'll come back.
Let her marinate a little bit.
You know, be a true Nepo baby. She has to work up to this.
Yeah, exactly right. But I got to say, I'm what, a week in? 8 days, 9 days in? And just the absolute mercurial oscillation between the highest highs and the lowest lows of your life is really something to deal with, where, like, and one moment you're just marveling at this amazing thing that you've made. And then the next moment you're like, man, am I the worst parent of all time? Like, who knows? Apparently I wasn't feeding her enough. I don't know. I thought I was doing a good job, but
this is such uncharted territory for you, though. Like,
yes.
You're not supposed to be a professional.
I know.
At this.
I try to remember that. I try in my darkest hours.
She's made it a week. I'm 9 months plus a week, if you think about it.
I know.
So, I mean,
this
is wonderful. And now you're on this sleep schedule.
Yes.
Like Ben was talking about now. Like, yeah, you're like last time she's sleeping so well.
So good.
Well, you know what? Here we go.
Actually,
the roller coaster has started.
You don't know anything. Okay. Yeah. We went early on. You think, oh, I've gotten this great pattern pattern going. And then you're like, no, that was only 3 days. Okay. Like, that's not a pattern.
That's,
okay.
That's in the past. Now.
Yeah. You're an idiot, actually. And you don't know what you're talking about. So, I mean, just talk to professionals. Only be concerned if they're concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's...
The Google, right? Get off
do
Google.
Do not Google, yes. We saw a specialist that you have to see. It's not, like, anything wrong with Rena or anything. Mm-hmm. But she gave Caitlin a great website. She's like, this is evidence-based yes. information. Go here. Do not Google it. And I was like, thank you so much for that, Dr.
Spock, yes.
Oh, my goodness. That was great.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're learning as you go. I mean, just wait till they're teenagers. I mean, I don't know how old Ben's kids are, but I mean, he's like the fourth one. And I'm like, ooh, we're in a wave pattern here. And yes. then like, as they grow,
Ben,
I mean,
gotta
oh
say,
my gosh.
Maybe five will do it for you. Yeah, you know,
maybe five
will bring you back around.
That's nice. Odd five. Yeah.
You know, it's another prime number.
That's like Nick, you know, my brother who listens. He's like, oh, I got a shout out on the pod. I'm like, that's the closest thing I got to kids right here. Right? Mm-hmm. Three boys under the age of 8. And my God, they just kept, I'm like, oh, you already have one good one, Nick, maybe no more. And then like, mm-hmm. oh, like the second one, and then like the third one, I'm like, okay, please no more. Three boys. We were one of three boys. I had cousins, three mm-hmm. boys. So like, you got the girl. It's a little bit different dynamic there.
Yes, but I'm very happy
I'm like,
to have a girl.
Oh, like just, this is the beginning. And then you got to think middle school and then high school. And then you think about what you were like in middle school and high school and then college. You're
a
like,
jerk.
Oh
yeah.
my God.
But truly, I'm excited.
The fear, it's day by day, though. That's
I'm
all you can do.
I'm excited for the teenage years.
Yeah.
I know that's a long time off. I'll be 50 by then. But I thrive with teens.
I've always told you that.
I thrive. Gavin says I should be a middle school teacher.
Every time we like present to a group or like college kids, like you're just always in the zone. And Caitlin was a high school teacher, right?
She was a middle school math teacher for a long time.
So you guys kind of have that understanding there, too. And then you said your stepmother, grandma, is also retiring from kindergarten. So
yeah,
like,
young,
that's a
young teacher.
Great little mm-hmm. mix there. You also love telling people what to do. So now you have someone full-time to tell what to do.
She is telling me what to do right now.
She's calling the shots right now, and you're out of your element.
Yeah, exactly.
You have no control over it.
She is producing me hard. Yeah. I need all the T's and P's.
Because I'm getting,
you know what I mean? And diapers.
I'm carrying the weight of this pod now, and I'm not used to that all the time.
I gas Gavin up normally, and he's having to gas me up every single day because I'm coming in absolute threadbare.
And I think it's gonna be that way for the next couple of years, and I'm just coming to terms with that.
No, I think I'm gonna tighten it up. Okay, maybe next week.
Now I will say I'm way more interested in hearing about people's kids than real estate.
Sure.
Which is what I find myself in conversations with these days.
Gavin we're of an age where if you get what? I'll say 4 30-somethings together, it's eventually going to hit real estate.
Yeah.
And I can't hear about ROI anymore.
Yeah.
Okay?
Like,
I can't hear about
it?
Price per square
foot.
Well,
you know, I'm just like, oh, go stop. Oh, God, no.
Yeah. Okay.
But honestly, if you listen to the podcast, hopefully, I'm talking to Tom Barkin about that. Like, that, okay. I will mm-hmm. talk to the head honcho about what's going on in the housing market.
Yeah.
But if you're telling me about what you're trying to get and all cash offers and above asking, I'm like,
no, don't say the word escrow to me, please. I don't want to hear about escrow.
Like what I mean, I rent, you know, I'm just a free spirit like that. I don't like to own too much stuff.
Gavin, he's a real minimalist. You know? He's got some honey and some butter, and maybe that's it.
But on the flip side, I also know my friends Neil and Luis just bought a new house, and it wasn't that extreme
mm-hmm.
because they're in West Columbia, they're in Casey, like pretty easy. But then you hear some other stories, depending on where you're trying to move,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be a bit more insane. So
my parents are selling their house right now.
Yeah.
They're getting their offers tomorrow. They've been waiting. No rolling offers. It's like a big thing up in New Jersey. I don't know how it goes. But anyway, I got to go.
I know. I just did what I hated. We just started talking about real estate.
Gavin, he's sick. It's infected him. He's been bit. He's been bit. He's been hiding
about
his
your
zombie
favorite Zillow.
He's been hiding
Zillow!
His zombie bite. Yeah, my Zestimate is through the roof right now. Anyway, people, have a good... is it a week? What day is it?
It's Monday,
Today's
yes.
Monday. Have Monday. A good week. I don't know what day
Time
it is.
Time does not exist for AT
I
anymore.
It's a fallacy. It's not real, okay? Have
you
a good week.
You see me on Mondays and Fridays, AT.
Yes, that's correct.
And thank you all for listening. Be like Ben Davis. Give us a shout. Call the pod, 803-563-7169. You heard the desperation in AT's voice. Give us some love. Give us some life. You can always leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, too. And you can stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Can we get some tree nuts and some whole dairy and some shrimp?